Hello, everyone. Glad to see you all. This is our third weekly, I won't call it a class, but a get together with one of the people that Torrid Motion knows from our trips around the world. Last week, many of you were here to listen to Rabbi Desani speak about the Jews of Italy. This week, we're very happy to be with Chaim Isachis, or Chaim Yitzchak, if you want to use the Hebrew. We know him well for our Torrid Motion trips to Greece. We are not going back to Greece this summer. We will again in the future go. And of course, if anyone wants to come with us to Greece in the future, we welcome you. But if you want a journey before that, all you have to do is go to his website, jewishtours@greece.com, and you can learn all about life of Jews in Greece. And you can even go to he has a Facebook page. But we'll talk how we got into this in a little while. Of course, Torrid Motion is going on trips this summer, and you will get emails. We are going to Portugal, and emails have gone out to people who've previously been on trips with us, I believe. We're going to Italy. We're going to Central Europe, a very exciting trip, and maybe even Spain. So we'll have time to speak about that later. But right now, I want to focus on Chaim, who's with us. Now, Chaim is a very special person. Anyone who goes to Greece and wants to know about the Jewish life, not just in Athens, but everywhere, and not just Jewish life today, Jewish life, if it ever existed anywhere, from the smallest little island to the big cities, Chaim is the man. Now, Chaim is not just a tour guide, as I said. He's also one who is actively involved in the great Jewish community, as we'll hear, and not just the current community, but also the past communities. That is, when it comes to the historical record in commemorating synagogues that no longer have anyone there but are part of the Jewish history in Greece. And also in what I can only call Kiruv, and going around wherever their Jews are in Greece and bringing some Judaism to them. He has also been, as we probably will hear, representative of the Jewish community in Greece, other places in the world, Holocaust remembrances, other events, because he is a chazan, and not just a chazan, a very special chazan, as I will soon explain. Now, we all know about Ashkenazim, Sephardim. We heard last week about the Italian Nusach. How many of you know about Romaniyot? Romaniyot was a long and proud community that included the Gedolei Yisrael, the Mizrahi is famous, and others. These were the native Jews in Greece and much of Turkey, and today, there is not even one shul left in the world which davens the Romaniyot Nusach. Even the shul in New York from Yanina, they do not daven it. There is one person in the world today who knows how to lane, well, him and he taught his son. No, there's only one person in the world today that regularly lanes the Romaniyot Nusach. I'm talking the entire world, and that's Chaim. When he goes to cities and when you come on our trips, and you will hear some of it later today, he's going to lane for us one Aliyah in one. Perek Parsha in Shema. And he is really the last of the Mohicans. I repeat this again. He is the last remaining figure in the world carrying on the tradition of Romaniyot Nusach and Romaniyot Truk. There is no place in the world other than Chaim, you'll hear it. And you will hear it today. And in fact, we are going to put it on, not just this will go online, will he lane for me two Aliyahs, and we will put them on the website and also put them on YouTube. So without any further ado, well, the way it's going to be is just like in the past. I will speak. I have a series of questions to ask Chaim, and maybe about 40 minutes. So we'll hear his laning and maybe hear his shofar blowing. Then we'll open it up to some questions from the listeners as well. So let me just begin, Chaim. Why don't you tell us about your background, how long your family has been in Greece, and also what led you to devote your life to the Greek Jewish community and showing people around Greece, because you didn't grow up with this in mind, that's for sure.
Hi, Mark. Nice to see you. After last year that you came here privately with your wife and children, that's great. So let me speak first about myself and then about the Romanian Jews, etc. So I was born in Athens. By two parents coming from different Romaniot communities. And we'll speak afterwards about the Romaniot Jews. I had a French education, and when I reached the age of Bar Mitzvah, my father insisted that he who taught me my parasha and the prayers. So he taught me It was Parasha Kitisa. He told me and I understood immediately, because I was a musician since I was a young boy. I was playing the guitar and the piano. I knew how to read the notes. So I said, "Dad, that's completely different from what we hear in the synagogue with other children, with other boys of my age." And he said, "Yes, because this is a Romaniot cantillation, is Romaniot nusach, is a Byzantine notes, and the others have other cantillation, which is more Sephardic or more Oriental, Mizrahi, etc." So it intrigued me to be the only one who did my bar mitzvah and the only boy my age who read the whole parasha. Boys usually here read just a small portion, one portion of the seven, and not the whole parasha. I read the whole thing, and the Haftarah, of course. And I went to French school, and when I finished, I was 17 and a half years old, I went to Israel, to the Hebrew University of Jerusalem. I stayed for 6 years. I have a bachelor's and a master's degree of geology and chemistry. And then in 1982, I came back to Greece. Why? Because there was no military agreement, and still there is no military agreement between the two countries. In Greece, to do the army is compulsory, in Israel also. So if I would stay in Israel, I had to do 3 years in Israel, and being a deserter here. So I decided, and my father also wanted me to come back because he didn't have any other relatives. So I came back. And then I already was with my wife, and we stayed in Greece. I became a merchant. I never worked as a geologist or as a chemistry. I speak fluently 5 languages. Apart from English, French is my first language because I had a French education. I also speak Hebrew very, very well. Better than English, of course, because I was in Israel for 6 years. And I also speak Italian. Like English. At that time, until the death of my father in 1996, we were a conservative family. That means we had Kiddush on Shabbat, but we didn't go to the shul. It was far away from our home. We went 3 times per year in shul on Rosh Hashanah, Kippur, and Pesach, but no more than that. And then my father died in 1996. My father was in Auschwitz. He was arrested with all the Jews of Ioannina, his hometown, on the 25th of March 1944. And he was arrested and deported to Auschwitz, and of course with a number. But when I was young, there were no films, there were no books. It was a taboo subject. Nobody wanted to speak about that. Even when I was in Israel, at that time, there was no March of the Living. It was just the Eichmann trial, far away in the 60s. So my father never spoke about that until he understood that he's going to die. So after Pesach 1996, he said, "I want to speak with you. I want to have some time to speak with you." And then he started narrating the whole story, and he had a very, very good memory, as I have a good memory also that I inherited from him. And he remembered all the details. Of course, we brought people from Yad Vashem. We brought people from Spielberg Foundation. But he didn't have the time to give it to give an interview to the Spirit Foundation. He did have the time to give it to Yad Vashem. And when this happened, I was so shocked to hear all these things, all this history of my father, how he suffered, because he did many camps and he did the death marches, and he walked from Auschwitz to Loslau, and from Loslau he went to Mauthausen, from Mauthausen he went to Gusen, from Gusen to Ebensee, until he was liberated from Ebensee on the 8th of May of 1945 by the American troops. So I was so shocked, and I said, "What am I doing?" I was a merchant of fashion accessories at that time, and I felt something very strong in me. I said, "I must continue with the tradition." I have to say here that my father was a cantor, and my great-grandfather was the rabbi of Ioannina. So I had some rabbinical and, let's say, cantorial chazanut roots, and I felt I had inside that I had to continue. The only person that stood by me was my wife. Everybody else, my mother, my brother, Zichronam Livracha, and all my friends, they said, "You're crazy, you have two children, what you're going to do? What is that? You are a very successful merchant, what you are going to, how you're going to live?" And as my wife said, "If you want to do that, go." So when I was in Israel, I was going every Friday night to a shul next to where I was living to hear the Moroccan tunes, the Tunisian tunes, the Algerian tunes, the Egyptian tunes, the Persian tunes. I was interested. And when I decided that I want to change the course of my life after my father, my father's death on the 25th of June, 1996, I took 1 year of Shabbaton to learn alone, didn't go to a yeshiva. I had everything in my memories. And slowly by slowly, I started my career, let's say, as a cantor in 1998. And in 2003, I went to all the Jewish communities of Greece to register how many Jews are living, if there is a synagogue, what are the Jewish sites, what is their nusach, etc., etc. I worked with the Jewish Museum. I worked with the Jewish community of Athens in the center to teach the children about the basic principles of Judaism, etc. And I started. I had a request from a Haredi group. The first who came here were Haredi people. And slowly by slowly by slowly, I became a Jewish guide in all the towns in Greece where there is a Jewish interest or a Jewish past or today what's going on. And also a cantor. This cantorial career started slowly by slowly in Greece. I took people to every single shul in Greece to funk, to make it revive again, to have Shabbat services, and to give life to very small communities.
Let me just say, for those who are interested in, you can, first of all, on his website, you can watch, he has a number of videos there of Chaim being a Chazan, but you can also get this CD of music of, well, I could send it to anyone. This is the printout of it, but you can certainly get it and listen to it. Before we go on, Chaim, because we'll come back to some of this, I want to ask you, why don't you give the listeners a sense, where today in Greece can you find Jews? And okay. Where and what's the population in the country as a whole of Jews and the cities that have Jews, the population? And where in these cities can you actually find a minyan on Shabbat?
Okay. Too many questions, but I'll try to reply to all of them. Before the war, there were 32 communities. Nowadays, there are only 8. All the rest was wiped out of the map because Greece, unfortunately, has a huge rate as a proportion of losses during the Holocaust, together with Lithuania, together with Slovakia, and together with Poland. We have 87% of losses during the Holocaust. It's a huge number. Before the war, there were 80,000 Jews living in Greece. Nowadays, there are less than 3,300. That means 3,300 people. Only 8 communities. In these 8 communities, there are in Athens, Salonika, Larissa, Volos, Trikala, Chalkis, Ioannina, and Corfu. 8 communities. Now, in Athens, is the biggest community after the war. Before the war, it was not a significant community, but after the war, there were 10,000 Jews left in Greece, and many of them decided to immigrate to Israel, to the States, etc. And those who could not live in a small in the small town came back to Athens. So Athens became the biggest community after the war, not before the war. Minyans you have only in Athens and in Salonika. If you want everyday minyan, in fact, there is only in Salonika. And it's a paid minyan. That means the rabbi over there is very Orthodox, Sephardic rabbi, Israeli with Moroccan roots. So he obliges the community to bring some old people, and the community gives them money for the pension. So it's a paid minyan, everyday minyan. Otherwise, in three communities of Greece, in Athens, Salonika, and Larissa, you have Minyanim only on Shabbatot and holidays.
Or during tourist season at the Chabad.
Oh, yes. Chabad is another thing. Chabad came here 20 years ago, and nowadays they have, not every day, but in summer, they have hundreds of people coming in Athens and Salonika. Now they have also a branch in the islands, in Rhodes, in Crete. Now they're opening also in Corfu, because we have in 2019, we had 700,000 Israeli tourists. I repeat, 700,000. It's huge. So there was a market for them. So they opened the market and they have kosher food, etc., to give to all these tourists. But have nothing to do with the Greek community. They are here to help all the tourists, the Jewish tourists that are coming, and to ensure kosher food for all these people. So Chabad, yes, of course, they have Shabbatot and Chagim, and sometimes they have also everyday Minyanim. But that's
There's
all.
Also a kosher hotel, they say, is opening in Mykonos.
They have it already opened. It opened already.
Okay.
It opened every year for Pesach. This year for Pesach, we're expecting more than 10,000 people coming from all over the world in various hotels. Why? Because right now, all these hotels are closed. So people are coming. They just took the whole thing, the whole hotel. They rent the whole hotel and they bring their own. They kosherize the kitchen because it's only them. They're not other guests. You understand? So there's hotels like that in Crete, in every island, in Mykonos, in Corfu, in Salonika, in Chalkidiki. Thousands of people are coming with these programs, of Pesach programs.
So how many Jews are in Athens and how many in Salonika?
We have 2,000 in Athens and around 750 in Salonika. Then we have 250, 300 in Larissa, and then five small communities of between 30 and 40 people.
Okay, and leaving aside Chabad, how many Shomer Shabbos are there in the entire Greece, you think?
Apart from the rabbis, no one. Chabad rabbis and the Greek rabbis, that's all.
That's it, okay. So this raises all other questions, but before we get to that, you know, you mentioned Romaniot a few times. I'm sure a lot of people, they haven't heard of Romaniot. Why don't you give a brief introduction? Who are the Romaniot Jews, of which very few remain left? Although these were the Jews before the Sephardim took over. We spoke about Morocco a couple weeks ago. It's the same thing happened in Morocco. The Sephardim came in and overpowered, not to the same extent as in Greece. So who are the Romaniot Jews?
Yes, it starts already from the destruction of Solomon's Temple. The first, we have the oldest establishment in the diaspora. It's written by various Jewish writers that the first Jews came to Greece after the destruction of Solomon's Temple in 586 BCE. Those Jews were mostly slaves that were sold by the Babylonians to prominent Greek families. And then we know that during the period that followed the conquests of Alexander the Great, many Hellenized, between quotation marks, Jews chose to immigrate to Greece. We know that Alexander the Great conquered Judea in 332 BCE, and we know by Flavius Josephus that he describes the scene that when the high priest of the temple, Shimon HaTzadik, went to meet with Alexander the Great at the outskirts of Jerusalem in order to know of his intentions, Flavius Josephus writes that he stepped down from his horse and he prostrated in front of him, saying to him that I know that it's your God, the real God, and the one I'm seeing visions, that your God is the one who helps me to win all these victories, and you'll be free. I'll let you to live exactly as you lived before. And not only that, I want to offer sacrifices in the altar of the Beit HaMikdash. And this really happened. So the Jews were free completely to live as before. And just a small detail to show you how Alexander the Great is important for us. We here in Greece, despite the fact that we're not frum, we're not religious Jews, we don't have, let's say, secular names. That means there is only the Jewish names is David, Moshe, Chaim, my son Daniel, my other son Avram. We don't have a Stephen or Bob or whatever. The same thing from women. We have only Sarah, Abigail. We don't have Susan or other names or Nancy or whatever. The only non-Jewish name written that we can give to our sons and daughters is Alexander and Alexandra to honor Alexander the Great. So what happened is that the Jews were free, but there was a huge interaction between the two main civilizations of that period, the Jewish civilization and the Greek civilization. And the Jews were attracted by the Greek way of life. They were attracted by the symposiums, by the mathematics, the buildings, the architecture. So slowly by slowly, they became Hellenized. They followed the Greek way of life, the Greek culture. And many centuries later, this led us to the story of Hanukkah. But let's go back to these Hellenized Jews. So when Alexander the Great died in 323 BCE, lots of these Hellenized Jews came to Greece. They knew the language, they adopted the Greek language, the Greek way of life, and they were living in Greece even long ago before the Romans conquered Greece. The Romans conquered Greece in 146 BCE. I forgot to say that because these Hellenized Jews had lost their ability of reading the Hebrew, that's why it's not by coincidence that the first translation of the Tanakh, the first translation of the Hebrew scriptures in any language, it was into Greek. And it happened in the 3rd century BCE in Alexandria, in a town named after Alexander the Great, in Egypt, under the Ptolemy dynasty. So we're coming, go to the Romans. In 146 BCE, Greece is conquered by the Romans. And in Greek, the empire of Romans, it's called Romania. So what the Romans called the pagans of that time, citizens of Rome. A citizens of Rome in Greek is Romei. That means the pagans, inhabitants of Greece, became Roman citizens. Now the Jews, because they believed in one God, that they were not pagans, they wanted to differentiate the name from the pagans, so they chose the name of Romania, which was the name of the Roman Empire in Greek. So they became Jews of Romania, which means these Romaniot Jews. Now, these Romaniot Jews were completely different than the Sephardics, the Ashkenazi, and the Italian Jews. They were closer to the Italian Nusach than the Ashkenazi and the Sephardic. They believed in the Palestinian Talmud, not in the Babylonian Talmud. And slowly by slowly, they did everything in this Greco-Yavanic language, which was Greco-Judean, mostly with Aramean words. And everything was written in this language. When the Talmud was written by Yehuda Anasi, the Mishnah, there were some rabbis that came in Greece and told them, listen, guys, if you do everything in Greek in this language, within the generation, you're going to lose everything. Mm-hmm. So slowly by slowly, what did they do is they started writing books and the Tanakh with Greek letters, but Hebrew pronunciation, transliteration. And we have books like that of the Agadah, of the book of Yonah that we read on Mincha of Yom Kippur, etc. So these Romanian Jews, their main occupation were carpenters, and they became specialists in silk. Why? Because of sharpness. Here in Greece, it's a very hot country. You cannot have a tallet from wool, and they had to find a lighter garment. So they became experts in silk, and they were exporting silk up until the Holocaust. The Sephardics came much later, in 1492, but they came in large numbers. When the Spanish traveler Benjamin of Tudela came to Greece in mid-12th century, 1159, 1160, he left us his notes, and we know that in almost in every major Jewish city there was a Jewish, very well organized Jewish congregation. Before the Sephardics, we had Jews that came from Bavaria out of a pogrom in 1370. Then the Jews of Spain and Portugal, then the Jews of Hungary, also because of a pogrom, and then the Jews of Italy, the Jews of Sicily first, and then the Jews of Apulia, because Greece was heaven for all Jews of Europe fleeing from their countries. Jews here in Greece under Ottoman Empire was a heaven for all these Jews. So we had many, many differences. Also Jews came from Provence, from France. So in Salonika, they had them before the war, they had more than 60, 70 shuls, and each shuls with a different name coming for the origin. That means the Catalan from Catalonia, and the Aragon, and the Leon, and the Évora from Portugal, and the Lisbon from Portugal, etc., etc. But what happened is that where the Sephardics went in large numbers, like in Morocco, they absorbed, after one generation or two, the existing Romagnot community. And these cities like Salonika, they became predominantly Sephardic. But still, there were three cities left in Greece, Chalkis, Ioannina, and Volos, that the Sephardics did not succeed in absorbing the local predominant Romagnot Minhag, and the Minhag remained as it is today, Romagnot. But the problem is that there is no Romagnot Sidur left after, I think the last one was written in Venice, something like that, or in Istanbul. And since then, there are not any books left. And all the people before the war, like my father, they knew it just the hearings of all this PU team. Unfortunately, all of these people, the majority, was killed in Auschwitz. And nowadays, there is no, apart from three PU team that are sung in this Greco-Judean language, like Untanet Tokef Kedushat Hayom, that we sing on Yom Kippur and Rosh Hashanah. I have the nusach in this Greco-Judean language. But as you say, nowadays
there's nothing left. So Hitler unfortunately put an end to that. But I want to give people a chance now. I'm going to put it up on the screen. And you will name for us in the Romaniot, with the Romaniot Amim.
I have the Sidur.
Yes, I'm going to put it though for the people they can follow. Many people listening, they can read Trump, so they'll be able to follow along with you. And I just want to remind people again that, if you want to learn about this, Steve Bowman has an important book. But among the sages that I think many of listening to will know in terms of Romaniot, the famous Rabbi Yael Mizrahi, who the commentator on Rashi. But we have many sages who are Romaniot. So here is Shema. We all know it. And Chaim, why don't you read it with the trump, the way you read it.
Shema Yisrael, Adonai Eloheinu, Adonai Echad. ברוך שם כבוד מלכותו לעולם ועד. ואהבת את אדוני אלוהיך בכל לבביך ובכל נפשך ובכל מאודיך. והיו הדברים האלה אשר אנוכי מצווך היום על לבביך ושיננתם לבניך ודיברת בם בשבתך בביתך ובלכתך בדרך ובשוכבך ובקומך וקשרתם לאות על ידיך והיו לטוטפות בין עיניך וכתבתם על מזוזות ביתך ובשעריך והיה אם שמוע תשמעו אל מצוותיי אשר אנוכי מצווה אתכם היום לאהבה את אדוני אלוהיכם ולעובדו בכל לבבכם ובכל נפשכם ונתתי מטר ארצכם ביתו יורה ומלקוש ואספת דגניך ותירושך ויצריך ונתתי עשב בשדך לבהמתך ואכלת ושבעת ישמרו לכם פן יפתה לבבכם ושרתם ועבדתם אלוהים אחרים והשתחוויתם להם וחרם. אוקיי?
Yes, it's perfect. In fact, I only had the first section online on the screen, but that's great. And as I mentioned before, we'll be putting two complete aliyot online. Someone asked that privately texted me that you should put the whole Torah on to preserve it. But once you see, even if you don't have the time for that, if you see a few aliyahs, you see the trup, you can learn from that. You can apply it to others as well. But I would encourage you, if you had the time, we'll even get it put on YU Torah weekend, where they have you and Rabbi Weider laning. But I want to now move to a different area. We can come back to some of this, and there's some questions I'll come back to later. For those of us remember years ago with Greece, Greece was always a problematic country when it came to Israel. The PLO was always very welcome there, and terrorists, the airport was always a place the terrorists seemed to have free access to. Can you tell us, first of all, today in Greece, how would you describe anti-Semitism and anti-Israel feeling? They often coincide. We've heard about events that have happened, and also compare it. Have things changed since you were young with how the government and the citizens regard Israel or Jews also?
Here in Greece, in my life, I never felt any anti-Semitism. Not in the school. It was a French school, though. Not in the high school, not in the army. There were no incidents that I personally felt or my family as anti-Semitism. What started with Papandreou back in 1981, it was with PLO, as you say, Arafat came, and it was very hard for us to see people demonstrating in front of the embassy of Israel, burning Israeli flags about PLO, etc., etc., etc. And of course, at that time, there were also some attacks to buildings. And that's why since then, there is always police officers guarding the major Jewish sites in big cities like Athens and Salonika, not in the small towns, only in big cities. But everything changed in 2012, that Greece was in a big economic crisis. And at that time, the son of Andreas Papandreou, Yorgos Papandreou, that means his son, met with Bibi, with Benjamin Netanyahu in Switzerland, in Davos. I don't know, they became friends somehow. And the Israeli prime minister set foot, came to Greece for the first time, I think, on the 16th of August, 1912. Why 16th of August? Because everybody's on vacation.
Not 2012.
Everybody's on vacation. Otherwise, we would be afraid of demonstrations, etc. And slowly by slowly, also because of what happened afterwards with the Mavi Marmara beforehand in 2010 with this flotilla in Gaza, Greece and Israel became allies and very good friends. And since then, Greek government, Israeli government and Greek ministers go to Israel very often. Now that we're speaking, the president of Israel, Yitzhak Herzog, is for an official visit in Athens. And he's seeing right now in the presidential building, the presidential palace, the president of the Greek democracy. So things changed. Mainly the past 5 years before the corona, I tell you, we have more an influx of flow. That means thousands of Israel, hundreds of thousands came to Greece, and now Israelis are buying property in Greece. And this, I'm afraid that perhaps it would lead to an anti-Semitism, because in 5 years ago it was in small scale, but right now Israelis are buying everything in Greece. Whatever they, in every city, in every island, even in the smallest village, they are buying properties. And this, I don't know where it's going to lead, but for the moment, the military allies and Greece is giving all the knowledge about the irrigation system, and Greece offers the space, because we are a much bigger country, five times the surface of Israel, for all the Israeli Chel Avir, the aviation, for doing exercises, etc., drills, etc. So never we had such big, such nice relations between Greece and Israel. And we had some problems with a very right party, extreme right. It was called the Golden Dawn. Now it doesn't exist anymore. People are in jail. But between 2015, when Greece was in the big economic crisis, and 2013 and 2016, there were some attacks in Jewish cemeteries, mainly by these members of this extreme organizations, but the government put cameras, and all they arrested all these people, and they are in prison right now. So I would say that never before we had such good relations between Greece and Israel.
Okay. I have only two more questions, I think, before we get to the people commenting. I'll read you their questions. What about the children? Is there any Jewish education and any future, really, for them in Greece if they want to be Jewish?
Yes. We have two schools in the major cities, Athens and Salonika. Unfortunately, these schools right now, in order to survive, they accepted also children from mixed families. That means one of the parents is Jewish, and the other one has to write a declaration that he or she agrees that the child would receive a Jewish education. But it's not a religious education. It's more like a cultural education. That means they go to the Hebrew, to the Jewish school, but they're not learning Torah. They're not learning Limudei Kodesh. They are just learning the holidays, what is Pesach, what is Rosh Hashanah, and why it's like that, and that means they're doing trips to Israel, but once more, there is no Jewish education, religious education. You're asking what about it's going to be afterwards. What I know, that in 1946, after the war, there were 10,000 Jews that lived in Greece. Nowadays, it's only 3,300. I don't know. What I know is back 20 years ago, when there was a big crisis in Argentina with the middle class, the community of Salonika tried to bring these people to Salonika because they spoke Spanish, and in Salonika they spoke Ladino. So it was, they tried, but because there were no European citizens, it was very complicated to get them permits of work and permits of residence. So the whole project was left out. Was dropped. So I don't know. Perhaps Greece will be again heaven from Jews living from other countries. I cannot say, but right now I don't see really any future. There are five small communities of less than 30 people, of less than 50 people, have 15 Corfu, only 13 Chalkis, which in about 15 years, 20 years, they're going to vanish. And then we'll be left only with three communities, Athens, Salonika, and Larissa. I don't know for how long, but unfortunately, this is the truth.
Okay. And for the last question I want to ask you, then we'll have more questions from the people who send it in the chat. I'll read the questions to you. Many people who've been with you in Greece, they've seen your shofar, and it has a special story to it. So I think just for a couple, just share, if you would, the story of your shofar, and especially since Rabbi Kelman asked me to ask you to share the story.
Okay. This is a shofar of 170 years old. It belonged to my great-grandfather. It's, of course, handmade. At that time, there were no tools like in nowadays. And despite the fact that it's written broken here, but there is no Sedek, Rabbi Shachter, when he came to Greece, and he's a big posek, he said that it is kosher. The sound is amazing. I never cleaned it. I never did anything to clean it. It's just pure sound. Now, what a story of the shofar, which is very moving, is that a member of the Greek police told my grandfather that I never met because he died in Auschwitz, and he died only 10 days before the liberation in Ebenezer, in Austria, in front of my father, because he was killed by a dog, and this is, was a shock that my father never overcame in his life. Anyway, so I never met my grandfather. So a cop told him, listen, they're going to arrest all the Jews. Try to get rid of all your precious belongings. So my great, my grandfather, he put everything in his in a bag, and then another bag, and buried in the garden of their home. And when my father came back in 1946, he was liberated in 1945, but he could not eat. And this saved his life, because if he could eat, he could die from a lot of, his stomach could not handle that. So he was taken by the Red Cross to an to a hospital in Italy, and he came back in to Greece in July 1946, because he hoped that as he saw in Italy, other survivors from other families, he believed that perhaps he could find a survivor from his own family, but he found no one. So the whole house was dug to find the gold, and he found some peasants living in the house. So he said that, you know, I was living here. He had to make a trial to get back his house with a dim, with witnesses that witnessed that he was living there before the war. But the only thing he found was this bag. And in this bag was this amazing shofar that I have it as a family, very, very precious souvenir. And has an amazing sound. And I don't use it on Rosh Hashanah because it's very difficult. It's the pia is very, very small. The opening is very, very small. So it's very hard to blow. But I use it always on Yom Kippur in Ioannina, in the synagogue that my father was blowing it and my grandfather was blowing it, to the, on the end of Yom Kippur in the Neila. So that's the story of this.
And he does blow it when the group is not gathering and he needs to get them on the bus. He's been known to blow the shofar to gather everyone.
Listen.
Yeah, okay. Very nice. Okay, let me take a few questions from the audience. Ruth began it by asking about the when you speak about the history of the Jews of Greece, do you also include the Jews of Rhodes, or is that really a separate history that really...
No. It's also the Jews of Rhodes. Rhodes was a Romagnot community, but after the influx of the Sephardic, it became predominantly a Sephardic community. In Rhodes, there were six shuls before the war. Only one survived the war. Unfortunately, nowadays in Rhodes, there are 17 Jews that live in the island. They don't have a minion. They just bring a cantor from Chazan from Israel for a Yom Kippur. That's all. And of course, I'm going very often over there for bar mitzvahs, because what happened is that the Jews of Rhodes is very sad. Is the Jews of Rhodes were arrested on the 23rd of July 1944, which means a month and a half after the D-Day. It was the last community to be destroyed by the Nazis in the war. We're talking about the end of the war, end of July. 15 days later, the Nazis left the island. So of this more than 2,000 Jews, less than 100 survived. But when they came back to Rhodes, they had Italian citizenship because Rhodes was annexed to Italy. Having an Italian citizenship, they could not claim from the homes. So all of them left. And they went mostly to America. There is a strong community in Seattle, Rhodes Lee community in Seattle, in Miami. So the one who lives now in Rhodes, they're not even born in Rhodes. What happened, we had big earthquakes here in 1953, 1954. So the board of the Jewish communities of Greece made an announcement that the ones who want to find a house could go to Rhodes, because we have homes that belong to Jews, but we don't have any Jews left. So the people that live nowadays to Rhodes come from the Greek mainland, not from the island. The Jews of Rhodes spoke perfectly Italian, perfectly Spanish, perfectly Ladino, perfectly French. And I only see them when I go to Rhodes for bar mitzvahs, because those who live in South Africa and Seattle, they always celebrate bar mitzvahs and weddings and happy events in Rhodes. So I'm going over there, and then I hear this Italian and this Spanish language. Okay. So Rhodes is a part, of course, of Greece. Yeah. Yes, of course.
And as I was there last summer, I highly encourage everyone. Chabad has a real thing going there. Someone wants to know, how many Israeli tourists a year come, without pandemic? Obviously, with the problems with Turkey, that also led to a lot of Israelis instead of going to Turkey.
I told you in 2019, according to all they became number one nationality. That means before the Israelis, the number one nationality were the Germans and the British. Israelis already since 2017 are the first nationality as numbers, and it is estimated that in 2019 more than 650,000 Israelis came to Greece. It was crazy. You could find them everywhere.
Everywhere. Now, someone asks us privately, text me to ask you, when is it that the Greek Jews stop being so observant? Is this already from the 19th century, like in Germany?
No, it's after the Shoah. It's after the Shoah. In Salonika, before the war, the port that was controlled by the Jews was closed. The main port of Greece was closed. People kept Shabbat. People kept kosher.
They kept it in the other towns, too?
Yes, in Ioannina, my father. Of course, in every town in Greece before the war, people were completely religious. They had a completely Jewish life. Nobody even would think to work on Shabbat or to light the light on Shabbat. Of course, there were no cars to drive, but they had a Jewish life. Everything was destroyed during the Holocaust. Why? Because if you take the map, Greece, Rhodes is 1 hour from Israel. Can you imagine that the Nazis took 2,000 people from Rhodes to bring them to Auschwitz? From Rhodes to Athens, it was 1 week of boat. And from Athens to Auschwitz was another 12 days of train. That's insane. Insane. So after what happened is, as we say, Anshe Emunah Avadu, the people lost their faith. It says, we had a very good life. We were keeping all the mitzvot. Why this happened to us? What did we do wrong? So if it's like that, there is no God. Where was God when my family was killed and cremated in Auschwitz? So after the war, and also what happened is that there were lists of all the Jews. So it was very easy to spot them. It was very easy to gather them. So people did not even want to declare that they were Jews. They did not even to be a member of the community for many, many years, out of fear that they would be again arrested. So it was because of the exact because
now,
of
what, the today then, what's the level of intermarriage, someone wants to know, when can intermarried people be members of the community?
Yes, but only if we're talking about the other person. If it's mostly a woman, gets lessons to become a member of the community. But these lessons are not very strict lessons like in the Orthodox communities. she has some lessons about 6 months. That's all. And it's just because she's married and the community does not want to lose another member. They prefer to have the whole family and then the children to register them in the, as members of the community, than to lose even the only one of the two that is Jewish. So, yes, unfortunately...
Well, who does the conversions? They do it in Greece or Israel?
Yes, we do it in Greece. They are not kosher conversions, chas v'shalom. They are not dayanim. They are not dayanim in Greece. They are not judges. We don't have a real bet din here. We do have a bet din that it's made out of the three Greek rabbis, Orthodox rabbis, in Athens, Salonika, and Larissa, but they're not dayanim. So, in fact, a conversion or a get... divorce here are not recognized in Israel, but for the Greek territory and for other countries it's okay. So for the
young people though, what is the percentage of the intermarriage rate?
It's a very big percentage.
Yeah.
Listen, in Athens, forget about the COVID. In 2019 we had 60 deaths, and we had 2 births. So you can understand what's going on. The community is dwindling because it's a very old community. I forgot to tell you that because of the economic crisis that has befallen to Greece in 2012, more than 400 Greek Jews, youngsters, left Greece. And they went to find jobs abroad. So you can find them nowadays in Israel. You can find them in Holland, in Great Britain, in France, in the States, in Canada. So in fact, we are an old community. So we have lots of deaths even before the corona, before the pandemic. And very, very few weddings and births. So the intermarriage, yes, there is not enough choice. That means... The problem is that the youngsters get to know each other since they are young. They go together to Israel and they go together to Kaitana, to summer camps. So when you know so much, very well a girl or a boy, you are like friendly. You cannot see him or see her differently. So in fact, there is no choice. And after high school, they fell in love in the university with the non-Jewish, and they're getting married because since 1982, this was a disaster. Since 1982, we have the civil marriage here. Before 1982, we did not have the civil marriage, and it was very, very complicated for couples to get married. So it was, the problem was less significant. But after 1982, it's very simple. They go to the municipality, they get married, they don't even get registered to the Jewish community. So yes, we have what is called hitbolelut. We have a big percentage of intermarriage, unfortunately.
So let me just, for those who asked how you can get in touch with Chaim, you can all, I gave it before, but you can also contact me. I just put my email there and I'll put you in touch with him. I just want to ask one more question. Jennifer's question about Jewish life in Greece in the next 25 or 50 years, he actually spoke about that. Unless he's not that hopeful. But someone privately texts me, and I guess we'll end, this will be the last question. And it is an interesting story, so I'm glad that this person asked it. During the war, how were the non-Jews? Did they help the Jews? Did they hide them or did they turn them in? And there are some interesting stories that it's nice, at least I think, to end on this, because there are some good things to be told about what happened with the non-Jews.
This is a very long subject. There were places where the authorities cooperated with the Nazis for some reasons. And there were many places, like in Athens and in other places. There is an island called Zakynthos, where the whole Jewish community survived thanks to the mayor and thanks to the bishop, that when this island was taken over by the Germans, because it was under Italian occupation, but when the Italians capitulated to the Allies on the 8th of September 1943, this island came under German control, and the German officer went to the mayor and the bishop to give them the name, the list of the Jews that were living on the island. On the island, there were 275 Jewish souls. And the mayor and the bishop said to him, okay, we'll give you the list tomorrow. They said to the Jews, that go to the mountains where the partisans will help you. And the next day they gave to the German officer an envelope with their names. Take us. We are the Jews of the island. So this never happened before in Europe. It is a film, a real film. It's called Zakynthos, the Island of the Righteous, a poem to the the glory. It was a book. It is the only place in Europe where the whole Jewish community survived, thanks to the bishop and the mayor. Also in Athens, the Archbishop of Athens saved thousands of Jews by issuing false identity cards and false baptism certificates. But in other places, like in Ioannina and like in Salonika, the authorities did cooperate with the Nazis, but for some reasons. But I can speak 1 hour about that. That means
We don't have time today. But when they come on your tour, Chaim will speak all about it. And yes, these individuals have been recognized by Yad Vashem. When you come on the tour, you'll also hear, if not from Chaim, certainly from me, the rabbi of Salonika. He also was a problematic figure because the community regarded him as a collaborator during the war. So there's a lot to talk about. We only had an hour, but this was really great, Chaim. I want to thank you on behalf of all of us for taking time out of your busy schedule. And I hope that anyone is planning, if you're not coming with Torah in Motion on any of our great trips this summer, I urge you to go to Greece. It's open. It's a great time to be there in the summer, and you can contact Chaim and he will show you the Greece or anywhere else, the islands, like no one else will. So thank you all for coming out today, and thank you, Chaim.
Thank you, Mark. It was a pleasure to see you again after last summer. I hope to see you again next year in Greece. I hope to see Ilana again. I hope to see Jay again and the whole
tour. Hashem. And we have people listening who are with us on our tours in Greece. So God willing, we'll all be there. Okay. So
it was very nice to see you. Kol hakavod, keep the good job. And let's wish that we'll see each other very soon. Okay.
Thank you. And thank you, Jennifer. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.